You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
So I'm just going to preface this with, I've heard quite a few different things around the university about what's happening within the Faculty of Social Sciences.
So it's not a faculty, that's the first thing though, it's Faculty of Arts, School of Social Sciences.
School of Social Sciences, apologies.
Yep.
So I've heard that courses are being cut, is this true?
Well, I think the word cut is the word that I think you need to understand. We are reducing the numbers of courses because it's a tidying up effort. Right now there were too many courses on the books, many of which were not offered on a given year. It was confusing to students. My metaphor would be like an overgrown garden, hard to find where the nice plants are, where the flowers are. We have to prune and take out weeds and take out some of the plants so that you could actually get some logic around our curriculum. So it really was part of an effort to renew the curriculum, make it easier for students to understand what courses are available, delete overlap in some of the courses, reduce choice, because we'd heard from students that choice was actually confusing. They didn't know what to take, so to create clearer pathways through majors. You need 8 courses in arts to do a major, and we thought if you have about 30 courses to choose from, that's sufficient choice, rather than, say, in some cases, 75 courses to choose from. Mm-hmm. So it's not about money. It's not about finances. It's really about trying to rationalize the curriculum, make it easier for students to grasp, and avoid some of the extra teaching that people were doing because they thought that was a course that was needed, when in fact it wasn't. Might be enrolling a lot of students and might not have been actually useful for students.
The figure I've heard is we're reducing from 650 courses to 400. Is that correct?
I don't know the exact figures, to be blunt, but to be honest, but that wouldn't surprise me. That is around the scale of the tidying up that we need to do. We're trying to have an average of around 30 courses per major, and in social sciences, there are probably about, I don't even know how many majors, but there'd be around that number of majors to equal somewhere in the 400 or 500 number of courses, I would think. So, yes, I would think it's close to being accurate, but I don't know the exact numbers. I haven't looked it up. And it's something we've been doing in the School of Humanities and in others, and throughout the Faculty of Arts. We've been trying to make our curriculum more rational.
What was the process in which these courses were selected to be deleted?
We asked the disciplines and the people who were teaching them to come up with a plan to look at their offerings and make choices as to which courses were not being taught or were not realistic to teach, which courses were essential, and they came back to us with their recommendations. So it was bottom up, but we had made the call to the staff to work on that.
Do you think students should have been consulted potentially in terms of what courses were running successfully and what weren't?
Well, we have data on a lot of that. So what we do look at student evaluations of our courses. We know which courses from that data. I think we needed to think about doing this as expeditiously as possible. And of course, we it wasn't an issue around, how do I put it? We have a lot of data that we could look at to see which courses we believe are successful from student satisfaction surveys and all sorts of other means, and even students vote with their feet. Where do they enroll? Where do they not enroll? So I think, yes, maybe it would have been nice to hold a forum and explain what we were doing and make sure that there weren't these misunderstandings. But at the time, we were trying very hard to achieve this, and it was quite complicated in its own right, as you can imagine, to make these kinds of choices.
One lecturer I've spoken with has said it felt like killing off one of his babies.
Well, I think what we're trying to do, Laura, is move from a lecturer-focused curriculum. In other words, lecturers decide what courses are interesting to lecturers, right, to a student-focused culture where we're thinking, what do students need in their studies and in order to gain a job, and you know, what skills do students need? So looking at it from a student perspective rather than from what the lecturer might be have found as their interesting course. Give you an example from my own life. I happen to be a linguist, and I do some languages of the former Yugoslavia. And when I first started my academic job as a lecturer in the United States, I had to teach a postgraduate course on my subject, the area that I was passionate about. I had 4 students in postgrad. I taught that course once, and the university made a similar kind of decision that, yes, it's very nice that I can teach my area of expertise, you know, completely, but there really wasn't student demand for that, and one had to think about what do students really need. And so it's sort of that conversation, it's getting that balance. It's, yes, we are doing research-informed teaching, which means I can bring in experiences from my research, findings from my research, but the content of the course overall should be of value to students as well as to the lecturer. And it's getting that balance that I think we've been trying to do. Mm. So I'm not saying that your lecturer, I don't know who it was, and I'm not asking, was complaining about, you know, they created perhaps a course. The course they thought was, you know, allowing them to get students interested in their area of research. That's possible. I don't know the context. But in fact, you know, was it doing that? Was it successful in that? And is there another way of incorporating the lecturer's interest into courses that also correspond with what students need or want and we think should have if they're doing a BA in criminology or sociology or anthropology? Mm-hmm. What should students learn? And so it's gaining that balance, right?
Yeah.
So we have we might have a lecturer who's interested in medical anthropology. Okay, does that mean we need a special course in medical anthropology, or do we incorporate that person's expertise into a more general course on anthropology that would have a broader appeal to students? And we're working on getting that balance right. But I can pretty much guarantee you that we don't have the capacity in a single year to teach 650 courses in social sciences. So there would be courses that might have been introduced by lecturers, you know, 20 years ago, some of whom may have retired, and we never tidied up the books and kept them on the books. So it's a little deceiving to say those courses are cut. They're not probably going to be offered in the future anyway, and we just had them on those books and hoped maybe a visitor would come and maybe be able to teach it. But that's a tidying up we never did. So we did our curriculum grew kind of organically based on lecturers' interests, but there was never an attempt to look at the overall picture and like, okay, what does our garden look like now? Is it a logically constructed garden, or is it like an overgrown garden full of too many plants and nobody can see the individual plants within that, you see? So I'm using that metaphor again.
Yeah, I think that goes against some of what I've heard in terms of these courses being deleted, because some of the courses that have been chosen to be deleted are things that were offered this year and now will no longer be offered next year. I think there's a lot of concern as well what this means in terms of class sizes. Should we be expecting class sizes to increase based on courses no longer being offered like that?
I don't know which specific courses you're referring to, so I can't comment on individual courses, you know, that might have been deleted or not will not be offered. I think that in any exercise like this, you tidy up, and then things start to grow back in according to what might be the needs. So, one of the things that we noticed is that in our faculty in particular, there were a lot of stage one courses, right? And those are large courses, I agree. But do we need, you know, six stage one courses in history and have students choose among those six stage one courses, or could we have fewer courses? And one of the motivations for having fewer courses is it also frees up lecturers to teach stage two and stage three courses, because a stage one course is very labor intensive. So it's trying to, again, find that fine balance between what our overall teaching capacity is, and we try to deliver postgrad, we try to deliver majors that are and honors and all these different levels, and we're also trying to think of new, interesting, innovative postgrad taught degrees. So it's trying to use our staff in the most effective way to be able to do all those things. And sometimes those courses that were deleted or may have been deleted were deleted in order for us to be able to do something else. Because it's kind of this universe where one thing gives, but that doesn't mean that opens an opportunity for something else to open up as well. So that's sort of the idea here. But without knowing the specific course, I don't know how to comment on it.
Yeah. It is a subcultures paper that is in sociology.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that will...
Do you know what number it was or is?
I'm not quite sure on the number. Mm-hmm. I believe it's a level 200 paper.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I don't have that information on me right now.
Yeah, well, you see, it just... Again, things a curriculum that's static, I think, is not a good thing. It's good to re-examine, to think this thing through, and whatever decision was made because there was a thought that, yes, a course could be offered this year and then not be offered again in the future. I've heard a few instances of that as well, but there's a rationale behind that, and that rationale may not be obvious to everybody, like the students who may have thought that, oh, well, that's a great course, you should take it, and now it won't be offered. But actually, if you look at who the lecturers were and you see what other courses they're offering, it's likely that the quality of the courses that they're going to be offering are going to be really good too, because often the quality of the course depends on the lecturer. So the lecturers are still here. This is not a budget-cutting exercise. Nobody's jobs were being lost by cutting these courses, and those lecturers are still available to the students. So the content might be moved into other courses. You know, it's a rethinking of the reshaping of the curriculum, and it hadn't been done in many, many years. It was a pretty chaotic curriculum before that.
Mm. Can we be expecting an increase in class sizes?
Maybe in some cases. It's possible, but then we would increase the numbers of tutorials so that those don't increase. That would be my take on that. There may be large lectures are, I think, at a certain point when it gets to over a certain number, it almost doesn't matter how big it is. It's a large lecture, and that's one of the parts of the course experience. But then we would hope have more, if a lecture size increases, and there are limitations based on class size, classes, and this amount. Lecture theaters are not all, they're not that many huge, big ones, so we're limited by that as well. But then at least we would hope to maintain the smaller tutorial experience and increase the number of tutorials.
Mm. Would overfill rooms be a potential?
Well, they're limited in size, so we can't, they'll just, if classes would close, you know, there would be, you know, if it reaches capacity, Amari 130, I think, reached 417 students. I don't think it can accommodate more. So what we could look at is offering some of these large lectures more frequently if in the past they were offered and they're popular and people want to take them. Once a year, maybe we'd offer them twice a year, you know, mm-hmm. so that we can accommodate the demand. So we will be listening, hoping for, you know, paying attention to this and trying to make sure that everybody who wants to take a School of Social Sciences stage one, because it's really in stage one that we're looking, that the more of the crunch would happen, that they would be able to. So again, feedback from students will be very helpful on issues like that, that we'll be monitoring through the lecturers, through the enrollment numbers that we look at very carefully, at, you know, every few days during the create enrollment season and then during the first couple of weeks of the semester. Mm. So if we have to open another section somehow or a parallel class, we will try, you know, we can try to do those things.
Many lecturers I've found have not been speaking about these course deletions. At one point, it was insinuated there was a gag order, in fact, which seems like a very extreme. I was wondering if you could quash those rumors.
That's absolutely not true. There's no gag order about any of this. Mm. I don't know where that came from, frankly. Yeah. Absolutely false. There's no gag order.
Okay, brilliant.
There's no atmosphere of fear and terror, you know, where we, you know, I don't know where you, where that came from. You know, I think one of my main goals in this year is to improve communication with students. Mm-hmm. You know, we do have a staffing review going on in one of our schools, Cultures, Languages, and Linguistics. I've met students at least 7 times in the last 2 months to tell them about this, to be as transparent as I possibly can. We can't consult with students, but we can inform you and discuss with you what the issues are and why we're doing what we're doing and how it might or may not impact the student experience. I'm also started a dean student forum to hear students' issues directly. You know, and that's where I'm hoping to hear feedback about course size. Mm-hmm. We're meeting 3 times a semester, so that's never happened before. And I'm going to be producing a dean student newsletter in arts. So I'm trying to really focus a lot this year on communicating with students, and I think students, when they see us come and talk to them and take an hour or two of our day to do that, they're very, very appreciative. And it hadn't been the sort of common practice, but I think starting that and making sure that that's part of our culture is really important to me. So that's why I'm really happy to talk to you today too and answer further questions if you have them in the future as well, so that we can keep these communications going.
Brilliant.
It's really important to me.
Yeah. The only last thing I wanted to ask is if students have feedback around these deletions, where should they be going? Who should they be reaching out to?
They can send them to me. I'm happy to receive feedback. To my email. Every time a student writes, if they have an issue, I might not answer, but I'll direct them to the right place or the right person. But I always answer a student's email, so I'm happy to engage over email with that. The other places they could go is they could talk to our Art Student Center, to our Student Development and Engagement Manager there, Vandana. Is her name, and she'd be, I'm sure, pass it along to me when I do the student newsletter, again, because I think it's important to quash anything that might be not really true. Like in your email to the Vice Chancellor, you said it's the cut in courses has to do with a 3% cut in the budget, which isn't actually true. Mm-hmm. Either, you know. So it's just, there are all sorts of kind of, you know, it's misunderstandings
rumors
that come from poor communication, and we can do a lot to improve that.
Mm. Brilliant. Thank you so much for talking with me. Anything else you want to add?
No. I'm really passionate about making the student experience actually better in the Faculty of Arts. So, you know, any feedback that I can, you know, I'll try to take on board, and that's why I've been really stepping up the efforts, especially this year, to engage with ASO, with Art Student Organization, with students across the faculty. I'm happy to continue in that way.
Brilliant. That's really great to hear and has quashed a lot of my concerns.
Oh, I'm happy that it did. And really, you know, if you hear things like that in the future and you wanted me to talk about it again, my ideal would have been, you know, we could do an arts radio hour or something. You know, mm-hmm. I love radio, and I love the fact that we have a radio station. And frankly, it should have a lot to do with our communications major. And, you know, I'd like to see more synergies. I'd like to see sort of some of these silos break down a little bit, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Because I think you're a great resource, and, you know, you're doing the things that some of our students who might be studying communication in the Faculty of Arts might want to working, you know, intern or work in a setting like yours. So, you know, I believe firmly in, you know, doing whatever we can to make this a more welcoming place and a place where the student experience is front and center in our thinking.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.